We are about to chat about the crisis in Georgia and the abuse of power that we are continuing to witness around the country in child welfare. Join us today on Fostering the Future.
Welcome to the Fostering the Future podcast, a show about all things child welfare, dependency, adoption, and foster care. Here are your hosts, veterans in the world of child welfare, Jack and Kat.
We believe that every human has incredible and equal value regardless of what side of the courtroom we sit on. We hope that everyone feels welcome and accepted here on Fostering the Future.
Make sure you follow us on Facebook or Instagram as Fostering the Future Podcast, or check us out on our website at fosteringthefuturepodcast.org. This is Jack, and Christy is back as my co-pilot today. Thank you, Christy, for not getting scared off the first time.
Glad to be here.
We also have Shelby with us today. Shelby is a Georgia mom who is here today to tell a story about how her family has been affected by the abuse of power in child welfare and this crisis that we've been seeing in Georgia. Thank you so much, Shelby, for giving us time with you and sharing your story with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get started, Shelby, we have to initiate you. That involves asking a very important question. What is your favorite drink at Starbucks?
My favorite drink is the iced caramel macchiato with extra caramel drizzle and add caramel syrup.
Jack Daddy, my husband, the iced caramel macchiato is his jam. He loves it. I like it to be mixed together. Like, it's pretty when it's got like the macchiato separation, but I'm like, I need it all together. It needs to be one consistency.
Yeah, pretty much. I mix it. Like, I start off drinking it with it, like, separate it, and then I like mix it because it is pretty much like a bitter taste. Like,
so Shelby, we know that you're one of the families in Georgia, like Kim mentioned. And we've been talking with you for a couple of weeks, and we understand that you've been separated from your daughter because of physical abuse that you did not commit, and that can be explained by medical diagnosis. Can you kind of take us through your story?
Yes. So I found out I was pregnant back in June of 2022, and I was getting ready to transfer to come down here to Georgia. I was currently in Washington State. So during that time, because we were traveling, they were unable to get me into OBGYN. So I didn't get to see an OBGYN until August of that year. So by that time, I was pretty much 3 months, I believe. So they hurried up and got me in. Everything looked fine. They said baby was growing normal. And then we got into the second trimester. Still said everything was normal. And then she told me around 15 to 20 weeks, I should start feeling baby move. So around 15 weeks, I still didn't feel her move. And then around 20 weeks, I started getting concerned, like, hey, I can't feel movement or whatever. But we would do the ultrasounds and I could see her move. And they were like, she's a very active baby. Like, we can see her moving. So that kind of gave me like a relief. And then we started getting further along and I wasn't gaining as much weight as she wanted me to. So my weight was stagnant. It was like not increasing. And then around like 25 weeks, I finally got an increase in weight. So I was like, okay, baby's getting big. So now I should be able to feel her. I still was unable to feel her. The ultrasounds to give me like the relief. And then eventually I just kind of was like, all right, she's moving and I just can't feel it. Or maybe I just don't know what to look for. We were supposed to do the genetic testing with my prior OBGYN, but she just wasn't listening to me. Like, she didn't seem like she was really concerned about what I was saying and like kind of downplaying everything to like, oh, it's just because you're pregnant. This is normal. This is normal. So I went to a new OBGYN. They did genetic testing and they came back that I carried the trait for alpha thalassemia. So from there, they asked me to have my husband come in and he got tested and he also carried the trait. So this was November. We ended up getting sent to an appointment in January of 2023. And that's when they told us that we both were carriers, so she was at risk and that will come with like possible blood transfusions and all this other stuff that would be needed if she came out with alpha thalassemia. So we were pretty much like freaked out. So they did an ultrasound to like just see how baby was doing. And then that took like a big turn and it came out that baby was IUGR. They basically were saying that baby was measuring small and there wasn't enough blood flow to my placenta. So they were saying that they didn't feel safe for me to go past 38 weeks. And so I was going to have to get induced at 38 weeks. So 38 weeks was on my birthday. So I asked if we could do it another day. And they chose the second, which was going to be like 38 weeks and 2 days. We went in February 1st for like a normal checkup and to talk about what the induction plan was and to see what time I needed to come in and all of that. From there, they listened to her heartbeat. They were just like, oh, did you eat today? Like asking a bunch of questions that started like making me curious, like, why are you asking me all this? And they were like, something's off in her heartbeat, so we're going to send you over to the hospital. They did another ultrasound, and it was a 45-minute stress test, and she wouldn't move or do anything. So they were like, baby has to come out today. So I ended up having her at 9:55. She was 7 pounds. Everything was pretty much normal. So we didn't see any concerns or anything other than she had high bilirubin levels. So we were frequently going back and forth to the doctor for that for like 3 weeks. They got that under control. From there, we were going back and forth to the doctor for like different rashes that we would see. They told us that it was just like eczema, which I was like, okay, I understand because I have eczema. So we started taking that into perspective and using different lotions and body washes. After that incident occurred, we started letting them know, like, she sleeps a lot, like, more than normal. She doesn't wake up really throughout the night. When we do wake her up throughout the night, she, like, refuses to feed. Like, she doesn't really want to eat. And they were like, well, if she's not crying for, like, the bottle, then she's full and stuff. But she was still, like, frequently asleep throughout the night, which I thought was a little weird. Yeah, we would keep going back and forth for that. Other than that, they said there were no concerns. Back in February, I believe her newborn screening came back that she had hemoglobin BARTS and she had the hemoglobin C trait. We didn't really look much into it. And when I was speaking with the doctor, she had told us that it wouldn't have any like direct effects on her. It would have effects on her kids. So we were like, okay, we didn't look more into it. Prior to this incident, we took her to the hospital March 22nd, because when she woke up from a nap, she had like 3 red dots on the side of her eye and it was this color. So we didn't know what had happened. We took her into the hospital and they never opened her eye or like did any kind of exam. They were like, oh, she has a black eye. The police came in. He was like, this doesn't look like a black eye. I was like, yeah, like we didn't do anything to her. Like she woke up from her nap. So they gave us some ointment and told us to put it on her eye. CPS was called. So we had a CPS case open. The next day, I didn't feel comfortable with their diagnosis, so I went to her pediatrician. Her pediatrician wasn't there, so another pediatrician that was there looked at her eye, and she was like, oh my God, I can't believe they called CPS on you for this. They usually do this a lot at their hospital over there. That's why I don't work at the hospital, and she just basically was saying that it was a bug bite, and to just be careful and make sure like we look around her eyes. For like,
was it a red dot outside of her eye?
Yeah, it was a red dot outside of her eye, and it was this discoloration. But by the time we went to the doctor, the next day, the discoloration had basically went away and it was just the 3 dots. And she was like, oh, that's a bug bite. April 6th, my husband was changing her onesie and getting her ready for bed. He heard a pop while I was in the kitchen preparing to like start breastfeeding. I was getting my pump parts and stuff. So he heard the pop. He runs in the kitchen. He tells me, so I drop everything. I run in the room. I look at her. She's like a little fuzzy, but not crying as if like her arm hurting. Like she's just like, hurry up, dad, and put these clothes on me. So he gets the clothes on her and then she's just chilling. Like we're watching her throughout the night to make sure like, you know, she's not fuzzy, no swelling, no bruising or nothing. Days went on. Everything was still normal. The weekend was Easter. So we did like some Easter egg hunts on base. We went to church that Sunday. She was like a little fuzzy, but I feel like it was more because we were out all day and she wasn't used to being out all day. So we came home. I gave her Tylenol, I believe, and then we went to bed. The next morning, dad went to work. So it's back to normal routine. I put her down for tummy time. And then that's when I noticed the arm that we heard pop. She wasn't trying to put pressure on it. And she was like screaming when she would put pressure on it. So I immediately called the doctor and I'm explaining to them what's going on. And they're like, oh, okay, your pediatrician isn't here, but another pediatrician can see you at 2. So I'm like, okay, is that the earliest? They say, yeah. I'm like, all right, that's fine. I'll be there too. Came in at 2. The pediatrician looked over her, checked her bones, said everything looked normal. And I'm like, something's not normal. Like, this can't be normal. And she's like, well, everything seems normal to me. Like, I don't see any, like, discomfort or anything. And I was like, well, I would just feel more comfortable if I was just to get an x-ray because the way she was screaming was not normal. She explained to me that she doesn't like exposing babies to the radiation for no reason. And I was just like, well, this is just one time, so can we just do it? So they did the x-ray. And then we sat there and waited because she asked me that I want to go home. And I was like, no, I'll wait. So I sat there and waited. They came back and said she had a fracture. We go back to the doctor's office because the hospital and the pediatrician are connected. We go back to the doctor's office and she's like, hey, so she had this fracture. And I'm like, oh, wow, like, how could that have happened? I'm like, would that be normal? And I explained to her what had happened. And she was like, well, that's not usually normal. And I was like, I don't know, like, how that could have happened. And then she was like, do you feel comfortable taking her to Wolfson Children's Hospital, which was a 45-minute drive? And I was like, of course. So I immediately left there, went to the hospital, waited in the waiting room for like 30 to 40 minutes. They finally took us back, took her vitals and everything. We sat in the room. They told me not to feed her because they were going to have to sedate her to put her in the cast. I was like, okay. And then around 11 o'clock, we were still just sitting in the room. And I'm like, okay, my baby hasn't ate since like 2 o'clock. You guys told me not to feed her because you guys were going to sedate her for the cast. And now she's getting grumpy because she's hungry. Ended up feeding her. They did the CT scan that night. They said the CT scan came back normal, but they wanted to monitor us overnight.
So the CT scan was for the right arm?
No, for her head. They didn't even explain to us like what they were doing. So we were just like thinking it's normal protocol. Like, y'all just want to make sure everything is like normal up there.
Because you brought her there for the arm, right?
Yeah. So we brought her in there for the arm. And then around 11, after I kept asking about the food, they finally came in and wrapped her with just like ACE bandage. Yeah. So they just wrapped her with ACE bandage. And I was like, okay, I thought you guys were going to play cast because that's what you made it seem like you were going
to
do.
And they made you go to a different state, a hospital 30 minutes away. Because the other hospital didn't have a cast for a child that small, right?
Yeah.
And so you go there and they use an ACE bandage.
Yeah.
But they don't have ACE bandages in Georgia?
I don't understand that.
Wow.
So I was like, okay, so they got the ACE bandage on. They did the CT scan. They said everything came back normal. So I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking just because it's late at night, they're just going to like continue to monitor her, which I'm completely fine with. Like, please make sure she's okay. So the next morning, we're just waiting. We get up around like 8 o'clock. They come in and they're like, hey, the doc just wants to do some more x-ray. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. So we go in. My husband goes in. I sit in the waiting room. They do the x-ray and they tell him not to get her dressed because the images are blurry. Then a few minutes passed by. He said they spoke with someone. And then they were like, oh, no, we're just going to use the images because we don't want to expose her to more radiation. We come back to the room. 20 minutes later, they tell us that they found 14 different fractures, all these rib fractures in her legs and all this. And we're like, well, could this come from us putting her in a car seat or anything? And they're like, no, kids get put in car seats every day. And like the whole demeanor just definitely changes. And we're like, I don't understand how she could have that many fractures. Like, can you see the fractures? Can you explain to us? And she's like, she's going to have a doc come in. Doc never comes in. I guess the CPT workers they have come in and they're questioning us about like what's going on. They're acting like everything's okay. I'm like, all right. And then I'm like, oh, can we just go home and get her some more clothes since you guys are saying we got to stay here another night? When I get to the house, a CPS case manager is at the door. So he's speaking with us and we're letting him know like we're here to get more milk and clothes for her because they're letting us know that she has to stay another night. And he was like, oh, okay, that's fine. He was like, I was going to meet you guys at the hospital, but they told me that you guys had left to come home. So he sat at our house for like 2 hours or so. He kept saying that there was no protection plan in place. And he kept calling, I guess, his supervisor asking her if there was a protection plan in place. They kept saying no. So he leaves the house. We get ready to leave. We're almost on the highway to get back to the hospital. They ask us to come back to DFAC. We go to the DFAC's office and that's where they're like, we're taking custody of her. So from there, we like lose it. I'm like, what the heck? I'm all over the table, about to fall out. We sit there. I'm trying to get myself back together. We say, can we still go to the hospital to just drop off the stuff so that she can have milk since I can't be there? He's like, yeah. So we go to the hospital. We drop off the stuff. We ask the lady as soon as we get there, like, if we can speak to somebody about the x-ray. Can somebody show us the x-ray because we don't understand what you guys are talking about? She's like, the radiologist isn't there right now, but we can come back in the morning. And I was like, okay, that's fine. Like, I'm going to come back in the morning anyways to bring more milk because I wasn't expecting not to be with my baby. So the next morning, we get up around like 7 or 8. We head to the hospital. We ring the little bell and we're sitting out there. She's like asking us, what are we there for? I'm like, oh, we're here to drop off milk. And then I guess she called the DPS or DFACS or whatever and told them like the parents are here and she doesn't know what we're here for. Because we get the call from my case manager at the time saying that she's saying that y'all aren't there with milk. And I was like, well, we're on the camera and we're here with milk. So then she comes out and she's like, oh, they do have milk. She comes, grabs the milk, and then we're waiting. And I'm like, hey, we wanted to speak with the radiologist about the x-rays. And she's like, okay, just wait a minute. So we're sitting there in the hallway for like 15 to 20 minutes. And then two police officers come out and they're like, hey, we were told to escort you guys out because you guys are asking too many questions and causing problems. And I was like, sir, we've just been sitting here. He was really nice. He wasn't like aggressive. And I was like, well, can you show us like where medical records are so we can get the records? So he walked us down to medical records. And this was April 11th. So then April 12th, I ended up having to come back to the defect's office. They wanted a statement again. We gave them a statement, and then he's like, the police wants to talk to you. So we go to the police station, we're talking to him. He asked me, do I feel comfortable taking the polygraph? I'm like, sure. So I take the test. He's like, I'll get back to you with the results. I was in the bathroom, I came back out, and I hear him talking to the other officer, basically like kind of in disbelief, but he still wasn't giving us the result. Friday comes, which I think was the 14th. My court-appointed attorney was there, and I asked him about the stress test, and he's like, yeah, I have it in here. It said you passed. And I was like, well, why didn't nobody tell me that? And he's like, yeah, but we can't use it in court. And I was like, okay. So,
but if you had failed,
they would have used,
used it in court.
Yeah. We were at court that day, and that's when the state attorney had told us that the foster mom had heard a pop. From there, me and my husband are both looking at each other because we didn't never know that she was out of the hospital. We didn't know she had been placed in foster care because we gave them names of relatives that were in Georgia and in Florida, but they didn't use them clearly. They just put her in a foster care. They said that the foster mom heard a pop and that there were no need to get it seen. But we eventually found out that the foster mom did in fact take her, and they said that there were no new fractures. They did note peristaltic reaction. And I guess that's just like a terminology they use for like long bone growth. And they say it's very common. When I looked it up on my own, it said it's common in like kids up to 6 months. So from there, we've been like going back and forth to court. We had Dr. Miller as one of our experts. Well, he was our only expert at the time. And he testified that he saw demineralization in her CT scan. He also stated that he felt like she had some kind of metabolic bone disease. And then their CAP doctor said that it was child abuse, nothing other than child abuse. We had to like grab the baby and shake her, slam her on concrete to cause these injuries. So in September, the judge granted the motion from the state for non-reunification and to terminate our parental rights. I retained a new attorney, and we got some new experts to look over her medical records, and they all had seen what Dr. Miller kind of said about some kind of bone disease. And so my attorney put in a motion to present new evidence before the court and try to get like to vacate the order that we currently have. And we still haven't heard of a court date for that, but they gave us a court date for the TPR trial, which is supposed to be May 14th. Prior to this, we went to court in February for a permanency hearing, and that's when they ordered us to pay, well, I have to pay $790 a month for child support, and my husband has to pay $360 a month for child support.
So they're making you pay to have child your support. Kid in their foster care.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
And she's still on TRICARE and everything, so I was like, it's not really like you guys are paying for. We've offered to bring her clothes. When we were bringing her clothes, they were like, oh, we don't need it. But at the visits, we bring everything. Like, we cook her food, we bring her clothes and stuff. We just get her dressed at the beginning of the visit and then put back on whatever she had at the end of the visit.
Have you continued, I would assume, to ask them to place with relatives?
Yes, we've been asking every time we went to court. We asked about being placed with relatives. They kept saying that, oh, they were waiting for more paperwork. And whenever I would ask my godmother, she would be like, well, I did everything that they asked me to do. And then they would send her more paperwork. So it was kind of like they were dragging it out, like saying they were waiting for more paperwork, but she wasn't aware they were waiting for more paperwork. Just recently in March, she said she completed everything and she still has not been moved over there.
She's been in care for a year. You provided family members a year ago. It's absolutely insane that they haven't gotten it together this far. Did they never offer you a case plan initially?
They never gave us a case plan, but my investigator that came out, he told us to start attending parenting classes. So we did parenting classes. They never gave us an official case plan. Every time we were asked, they were like, we're waiting to see what happens at court. So we were never given a case plan.
So they were planning to TPR you from the get-go. Because even parents who actually abuse their kids are often given case plans and the opportunity to get their kids back. So the fact that like they didn't even offer you a case plan and in less than a year, they're trying to TPR your rights is insane. Like this is so unbelievable. In Florida, in my experience, we don't have as much criminalization of child abuse based on the cases that I've seen. You know, a very small percent of kids who come into foster care are even physically abused. It's usually, especially in our area, it's a lot more of like drug scenarios, neglect scenarios. But the ones that come in with physical abuse, often there's no criminal charges. But a lot of the people that I've spoken with in Georgia, even when it's pretty clear that no abuse happens, these people are facing criminal charges. Did they ever talk about potentially doing that to you or...
So I haven't heard anything about criminal charges. I know the Navy wanted to know what was going on with criminal charges. And they said that they were told that there's probably not going to be criminal charges because they don't know who did it.
I'm not sure if I heard this right, but did NCIS investigate you at all?
Yeah. So the Navy did their own investigation. NCIS and stuff did their own investigation. And they don't give me like details about the investigation. But as far as I know, nothing was found.
You're currently active duty Navy?
Yes.
So the NCIS investigated and clearly they saw no signs of abuse, but still they're still seeking TPR. And you said that there are current motions for vacating the TPR, but you haven't gotten court dates from them. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, it was because we got the motion granted for the non-reunification in the TPR. And so I just retained my new attorney in October after, you know, like, this was granted. And then she put in a motion to vacate the order and to present new evidence so that we can present the new experts and the information that we have found out. But we haven't heard a hearing for that. And that's what we thought we were waiting for until like 2 weeks ago when they served me with the petition for the TPR.
So you've got the TPR trial in 2 weeks and they still haven't given you a court date for the motion to vacate the TPR.
So the petition just came 2 weeks ago, but yeah, we were trying to vacate the order that they had originally put in for like the non-reunification into the TPR, trying to get it like turned around with the new evidence that we have.
Right.
We haven't got a court hearing for that.
Well, I hope they do that in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, hopefully. My attorney says she's working on some stuff now, so hopefully we can get court pushed back. I don't know.
Can I go back to the testing that you had done when you were pregnant? Or whenever that happened, can you explain about the BART?
So I found out about the alpha thalassemia trait while I was pregnant when they did the genetic screening where they like checked to see if they had like Down syndrome. Or I don't know exactly what all they checked for, but I guess they checked for a lot of things and they let you know what you have. So me and him both were carriers for that, but they were like, it's just a 50% chance. And so like, we'll find out when she was born. But when she was born, they didn't raise any like concerns that she needed any blood transfusions. So we were like, okay, she's clear of the alpha thalassemia. It wasn't until her newborn screening came back. I guess that's something they do in Georgia. And that came back with the hemoglobin BARTs and the hemoglobin C trait. And when I looked into what hemoglobin BARTs is, hemoglobin BARTs means that they have a sign of alpha thalassemia. They have some sort of alpha thalassemia. We were looking through her medical records recently, and we've seen in March of last year that there was a diagnosis of alpha thalassemia. And when I looked into that, it says that causes low bone mineral density and higher fractures, like high fragility.
You already have a diagnosis in her records for alpha thalassemia.
Yeah, so it's on her blood work, like when they did the blood work, how they have like an appointment for that day, and it has the diagnosis as alpha thalassemia.
So the hemoglobin BART can cause low bone density and fractures?
Yes.
When I read about both you and your husband having the alpha thalassemia trait, that immediately made me curious because one of my kids has the beta thalassemia trait. And I know that when I was told about that, that can create a number of different symptoms. So I looked it up and... With the alpha thalassemia, which you and your husband both have a trait for, there's, I believe, four different levels of alpha thalassemia. Each parent can give two traits of alpha thalassemia. If you only get one trait from one parent, it's kind of like a level one alpha thalassemia. If you get two from each parent, that's level four thalassemia. And level four thalassemia, a lot of the times, they're not born. They're stillborn.
Right? Yeah.
So I would imagine that when the doctors saw her healthy At birth, they were like, okay, we don't have to worry about that. But that doesn't mean that maybe she didn't have level 1, 2, or 3, right? And one of these other levels could be explaining a variety of her condition. You were in the hospital with rashes, with unexplained things that they were trying to find the common or simple reason for. You know, I was researching it today, and thalassemia in various levels can cause the bone marrow to expand, which creates fractures. Just knowing that you and your husband have the alpha thalassemia trait, we know that your child is at risk for fractures. Whether she got 1 or 3 or, you know, however many she got, that's huge. And then looking at the other thing, you had said
frequently popping since being in foster care, and that's also documented. Yeah, me and the foster parent both said that she frequently pops. The doctor said that there raises no concern, babies pop.
Okay, that's lovely. I've had like 120 foster kids. The vast majority of them have been like little babies, and I have never in my life heard a baby pop.
I've never, because I love kids. I love babies and stuff. So like prior to me getting pregnant, I was just like everybody's little babysitter. Like, let me get the baby. Let me get the baby. So I'm like, I've never heard nobody baby popping, or I would have been like, come get your baby. I'm not getting a baby. Right. Why is your baby popping? So yeah.
I appreciate that a doctor feels like that's normal. I have never in my life heard that.
She wrote it in the doctor's note that the baby frequently pops.
Note that it's normal now that she's in foster care. It's fine. We don't need any x-rays. But when she popped with you, like, you know, what are you
doing? Take her away. Take her away. Yeah. So what do the doctors actually believe her diagnoses are?
Yeah, the CAP doctor who testified, she just said it was child abuse. We had to squeeze her and shake her. That's what caused the buckle fractures on her knee. Like, her legs were full. But she had no bruising or no scar. Like, nothing at all.
And if a child was going to have fractures, they would have bruises.
Yeah, and then I was also curious about, like, how they said she had all these healing fractures of her ribs. But I was like, why was her ribs not wrapped? Like, it was just weird. Like, all of these fractures that y'all said that she had, but you only acknowledged the arm fracture as something that you know, like, wrapped or tried to, like, you know, get better. And that's the only fracture that I can honestly say that I see. And when the CAP doctor also testified, she was saying that she wasn't qualified or can't see fractures. She were told where the fractures were at. So I'm just like, so you can see the fractures, but...
Anaria was born in February. She was removed in April. She was 2 months old, right?
Yeah, 9 weeks when they took her.
And they said they found 14 fractures, but mm-hmm. there were no, like, scars.
No scars, no bruising. And I said, I feel like her stomach should have been swollen up with all those rib fractures.
They think you did this within 9 weeks, and there's no marks like that. That's pretty talented.
So stated by the state attorney that we're really intelligent parents. So I guess he think we strategically did it. I don't know why he emphasized that we're really intelligent parents.
What was the name of your CAP doctor?
Dr. Rodriguez Powell. Rebecca Rodriguez Powell.
Since the child has been in care, you were able to get your own medical records and her medical records, and you've had experts testify to what they believe she has, right?
Yeah, just the one expert, Dr. Miller. And then the rest of them we haven't had been able to present them. Yeah.
So you have other doctors, but they wouldn't let you present them yet?
We just haven't presented them because we found them after the September hearing.
So, but you were able to find that you had vitamin D deficiency and you were anemic. Even after being on supplements, you were still had low vitamin D and anemic, right?
Yeah, and that's crazy that she just asked me that because I just got a call 2 hours ago because I got my blood work done again on Friday. And they told me to come back in tomorrow to get more medication because my levels are still abnormal. So they want to put me on it again for 12 weeks. My vitamin D was a 17. And I can't remember what the iron levels were, but I know they were like, they weren't super, super low, like how my vitamin D is like severely below. But they were like low enough to where they want to put me back on medication.
So they put you on one dose of vitamin D. They increased it because that wasn't doing it. Now they have to increase it again?
Yeah. So I got tested in June because I'm like, okay, let me check my vitamin D because my vitamin D was never checked while I was pregnant. When I went in June, my vitamin D was a 21. So she was like, that's extremely low. She put me on medication and then it went down to a 19. And that was in October. So from June to October. And then in October, she put me back on medication again. I got tested again in March. March is when they just found out that it was 17. And then she put me on the 50,000 units and told me to come back in 12 weeks from March.
They wanted to go up, not down, right?
Yes. It's just
but it's going down, even with more medicine. Yeah.
So they checked my thyroid just to like make sure that was okay. She said that came back normal. So I guess after this next round, they're going to try to figure out like what's causing it to go down.
Because that is very common in a lot of these diseases that are associated with things that cause fractures. They're all genetic, right?
My mom has vitamin D issues where it's not traced in her body at all.
So we know low vitamin D can cause various brittle bone diseases. You've clearly got low vitamin D, regardless of the fact that you're aggressively treating it. Your mom has it. She's been diagnosed with alpha thalassemia. She's been diagnosed with the hemoglobin parts. And you've had a medical expert testify that he believes she has a metabolic bone disease because of the poor bone mineralization in the CT scan of her head. But with all of that information, they still haven't brought her home yet.
Yeah. In the CAP doctor's report, when I went back and reread it recently, I see that she acknowledged the hemoglobin parts and said that that cannot cause fragility.
She said it can't cause fragility?
That raises like no concerns for the injuries.
So they are still relying on this report by this doctor. Is she still having any kind of involvement in the case?
So she testified that one time, and then I've been trying to like do research into her. I just recently heard from another mom that apparently she left the country. She was supposed to testify at some case and she left the country.
I mean, good riddance. So, can we do that with all of the child abuse pediatricians?
When I looked up her her little writing at the bottom, like where she worked at, it was the same one. Dr. Knox popped up, but she didn't pop up. So that's when I started looking into her more. And then I seen that I couldn't find her anywhere. Like, I don't have no reviews. There's nothing. And so the mom that I was talking to, she spoke with someone that she knew. I think it was like an attorney or something. And they were like, oh, yeah, that doctor was supposed to testify at a hearing and she didn't show up. Like, she fled. So they didn't even know that she wasn't coming to the hearing. She went back to Puerto Rico. And then when I looked up her like licensing and stuff, said that she was a trainee.
A trainee with an E or a trainer with an R?
Yeah, like she was in a fellowship. So I don't know if she had finished the fellowship and was hired or if her report is just through her being in the fellowship. So
she and Dr. Like Barbara Knox was investigated in Wisconsin and Alaska for falsely accusing parents of abuse. Colleagues of hers complained because she was trying to intimidate other doctors and get them to say that there was abuse even when there wasn't. And right, she resigned from her positions in Wisconsin and Alaska. And then she got hired down in Jacksonville, Florida at Wolfson.
Like if they were colleagues, was she like just telling everybody to say child abuse?
It's hard sometimes, especially when you're in the thick of it, to like isolate the various things that have happened, exactly what the wrongdoings. Obviously, the fact that your child has been away from you for a year, I think we've got clear evidence here that abuse didn't happen. Like that in itself is a wrongdoing. But a lot of the times what I've seen with these cases is in order to kind of cover up their mistake, they do more things wrong. You've got people lying and manipulating facts. Have you seen any other wrongdoings in this case where case managers or investigators have done things that they weren't supposed to?
The case manager before the one that I have now, she was really supportive, looking for answers, trying to get her to a new doctor to like have different eyes on it. And then all of a sudden, she got taken off my case. And I got a new case manager. The new case manager is more so with the narrative of child abuse. So that was kind of like strange to me. And then when they acknowledged that they were taking him off the case, they felt the need to say, we're not taking her off the case because we feel like she's helping you. You know what you're doing. So why did you say that? Because I didn't say that. Like you felt like you needed to say that.
So you have a friend who has a similar situation, right? You both have the same caseworker. Is that right? And the same judge?
Yes.
And the same hospital making the accusation.
Yeah.
I mean, really, that says it all, too. You know, it's unbelievable. How would you say that this whole situation has impacted you and your husband in your community. So you're in the Navy. What challenges has it presented?
When this occurred, I was on maternity leave. As soon as I called my chief at the time, he was very supportive and was like, make sure you please stay in contact with me throughout the whole process. Let me know everything that's going on. They wanted to be very involved. They come to court every hearing. They speak positive with me. They're like willing to offer anything that they can do to help. My relationship in the Navy is really good. We felt so isolated at the beginning until we started seeing that it was happening to so many more families. But then we started bonding together and it still like frustrates us and like we get emotional because we just can't believe that like this is our first child and we've missed out on basically her whole first year of life. And that's something that could never be given back to us. Like we're never going to see her first time crawling, her first time cooing, her first time walking. We don't have family out here because I just got stationed here. And then we haven't really came out with my family like as much or his family, like my mom and my grandmother and a few of my aunts know, but for the most part, everybody just thinks we have a baby. Since going through this, we've met like some really amazing people, just like our friend from here in the county.
Have your extended family been able to see her?
So my mom came at the day after I had the baby. So my mom got to meet her. His mom is, she lived in London. So she had came here on February 11th. So she got to meet her and his aunts and a few of his like friends, a few of his like family friends in Florida was able to meet her. But that's it. My grandmother has never met her. My grandfather has never met her. My sister just met her 2 weeks ago because she moved to Camden. So she was able to come to a visit at a visitation center.
It doesn't just fracture the relationship with the parents, but the entire extended family.
My grandmother is distraught because me and my cousin, we both were pregnant at the same time. So Anaria was born in April. And then my cousin had her baby the same day that my baby got taken away. So my grandma was like really excited to meet Anaria and then she never got to meet her and she's like the oldest great grand, the first great grand. And then she was only able to meet my cousin's baby.
Like that's the thing is if they fix everything right now, they bring Anaria home, they drop everything, you don't have to deal with case managers anymore. You've still lost the first year of her life and that's devastating. And not just that you lost it, she lost it. Like, she needs that, too. Like, she needs her mom. She needs her dad. Living in foster care is not the best way to live, you know?
We are really bonded. Like, we could tell at visitation, we were thinking that, like, oh, they should just go to everybody. But when my sister came to the visit, we were able to see her act a little different. Okay, I don't know you. So that kind of, like, gave us a relief, but not a relief. You don't know your auntie, but gave us a relief that, like, okay, like, she does know. She bonded to us. Like, she kept coming to us. So that kind of, like, made us feel good that, like, oh, she felt safe. I also, like, pumped up until December of this previous year. Yeah, I pumped every 2 hours to make sure that I could produce enough milk to send to her.
So for 10 months, you pumped.
So courageous.
Obviously, I have a very secondhand view or perspective of these abuses of power because I've not personally had it happen to me, but I've had it happen to people I care about. And I care about people that it's happened to. We've been overwhelmed with abuse of power over the past year or so. It's wrecked our view of reality because I used to live in a world where, for the most part, when people get their kids taken away, there's usually like something going on. Generally, when kids come to my house, like I can literally see the reasons that they've come. So I lived in this fairy tale and we've been broken out of that. And my feeling of safety and security, especially as a parent, is totally out the window. And that's not something that I ever really felt before. I would imagine that that has been exponentially more for you as someone who has been accused of something that you didn't do. How has that changed your perspective?
A lot. Because like I said, I love kids. I love kids. Like I want to be a pediatrician. And now it's pushed me away from even wanting to do that. Like wanting to even be associated with a corruption of this nature. Like, I don't want nobody to look at me and think like, oh, she's a corrupted doctor or whatever. And so that's kind of like changed my whole mindset on what I actually wanted to do in my life. So like now I'm like thinking about different things and like, I don't think I want to go into like a field like this. And then it's kind of has me like questioning so much, like if I do have more kids or when she does come home, like, how do I know what to trust and what not to trust? Like if you do give me a diagnosis of like being like, you know, something not as severe. I don't know. It's like their word isn't really trusted. Coming into the situation, whenever they were accusing us of abusing her, I felt like, okay, when we go to court, the judge is clearly going to see that we didn't abuse her. Like, they're clearly going to see that we didn't hurt her. I would have never imagined that it was going to go on this long trying to prove that we didn't hurt her. Definitely feels like a nightmare, and it makes me question every article I've ever read or everything I've ever said about somebody abusing a kid. My family members, some of them are foster parents, and I've seen them like would abuse kids, and they have questioning like, were these kids really abused, or did we just like get the narrative that they were abused and we just kind of like went with it? Now we're on the other side, seeing the parent being accused of abusing them, and we want somebody to hear that we're innocent, and it's just like really frustrating. And I was like, this is so crazy. Like, I didn't even know this was going on, like, right here while I was pregnant. That would have definitely put me into, like, a whole different mindset.
Yeah, these hospitals need warning signs on the door that says, you know, if you bring your kid in here, you might not leave with them. Now there's families in Atlanta, at Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, like 24 families so far.
Well, the kids that I do see that are genuinely abused, it's like they never find these kids until it's having to die. And these are parents that they'd be like, oh, they went there and they had no cause or concern. So then it's like every parent that is like begging you to see their kid, like reaching out, you feel like it's abuse. And I feel like nobody is going to abuse their kid and take them to the doctor. Nobody is doing that. It's like kind of weird to me that all of the kids that I see them taking are all nonverbal kids. And like all of our babies are like around the same age. I don't see 3 and 4 year olds. And I'm like, a baby really doesn't do anything to make you that angry. Like a 3 or 4 year old, people might get frustrated, but I still don't see them getting angry enough to like abuse their kid, you know? But right. People are just going to abuse tiny little babies.
I feel like the child abuse pediatrician field, at least how it's existing right now, is garbage because they're only in hospitals. I don't think they're going out to people's houses. All of the kids that I have had that actually had any type of physical abuse, their parents did not bring them to the hospital. Someone who knew them and knew what was going on called and said something. Every single one of my kids that have been physically abused, that was the case. It just makes you kind of feel like these child abuse pediatricians who are sitting in hospitals waiting for parents to come in, not knowing what's going on with their kids, are like waiting to pounce.
When I went to the doctor, she basically said like my baby wasn't even crying. So how did she have so many fractures?
And there's nothing on the outside. It's only on the inside, which is like indicative of something going on inside causing those fractures.
My daughter had broken bones. Like she broke her ankle and her shoulder. I'm wondering, because I think Jen was talking about, it's not really a break like you would think. It's more of a lesion. They're calling them fractures, but are they really fractures that would be induced by physical abuse?
Our x-rays have never been brought up in court. Only person who has brought up an x-ray was our medical expert. My cat doctor didn't bring up an x-ray to prove her point. She drew a picture and they put little pink dots where the fractures were. So the fractures have never been seen. Like,
wait, they didn't show the x-rays? She drew a picture?
Yeah.
I think she's got a Grey's Anatomy medical degree like me. that doesn't sound like real doctor.
I'm not even going to say drew a picture. She took a picture of the human body and crossed it out like with just the little bones and stuff and put little dots where the fractures are supposed to be. Dr. Valeri, when he brought up the CT scan, and then they argued that he could have altered the x-rays.
So they're also accusing a doctor of altering x-rays.
Yeah.
So their doctor, who didn't even bring an x-ray, has all the credibility in the world. But another doctor who brings an x-ray, we're not even going to trust the x-ray. That makes a lot of sense. This is the problem with these child abuse pediatricians. There's no accountability when they're wrong. Everybody just flies with it.
After they argue about the black eye, I guess they had her go to an eye doctor. And then the eye doctor put in that there were no hemorrhaging behind the eye. But that still doesn't mean it wasn't abuse.
They went back and said that was a black eye?
Yeah, they were trying to argue that in court. The first day we went in, we felt like they were going to bring that up. So I had brought in all that paperwork. And they were like, and this baby also sustained a black eye. And I was like, no, we have this right here where we went back to the doctor and she said it wasn't a black eye. And then they argue like, oh, well, we didn't see that. We didn't have that paperwork. But it's just like, you said the doctor told you it was a black eye, but clearly you didn't talk to the doctor. So that's like you getting caught in your lie because you said you spoke with the doctor and she told you it was a black eye. But I have the paper where she didn't say it was a black eye. And so that incident has never been brought back up in court. And I'm like, so how do we punch her? One, I feel like if you punch a baby in the face, my hand is not that small. So it wouldn't be a little mark. It would be her whole side of her face because our fist is like the size of her face.
So on the 14th is the TPR trial date. So can you kind of explain what that would mean?
the TPR trial is basically a trial, I guess, for DFACs to terminate our parental rights and put our baby up for adoption.
Yeah. Do you feel confident in your new attorney?
Overall, yeah. I've heard really good things about her.
Well, and hopefully they grant you one of these dismissal hearings to vacate the termination order before the TPR trial even happens. One of the things that gives me a bit of hope that I didn't have before I talked to you, you haven't been able to present a lot of the evidence that you have proving that this wasn't child abuse. And the fact that there's medical records that the judge has not heard about and medical experts the judge hasn't heard about. In a lot of the other cases, that isn't the case. That gives me a bit of hope that we might even be able to avoid the trial if they grant you a hearing for that.
That's what we were expecting, because that's what we felt like would be the way that it would go. Because if we have a motion, then we didn't feel like we could have a TPR trial because you haven't heard all the evidence.
Exactly. Chrissy's from Atlanta and she has family there and she was visiting. And while she was there, she saw a news episode, probably one of the ones with Rebecca Lindstrom on
11 Live.
Yeah, so she was up there and she was like sending me clips and saying, have you heard about this? And I was like, actually, yeah, because I had spoken with Jennifer last year about the Hernandez family. When I first spoke with Jennifer last year, I didn't know about all these other families. I don't even know if she did at the time. So when we saw your story on the Parents Behind the Pinwheel site, both of us were immediately like, oh my gosh, the TPR trial is coming up. Like, we've got to do something. People need to hear about the story and make sure this gets stopped. I wanted to encourage our listeners to reach out to lawmakers to have the story told. Like, the governor is, his autograph is on everything that goes through DFACs. It has his signature on it. It has his name on it. So if he's going to be the overseer of such things, he should know about the abuse of power that's happening in a state. I would like to encourage our listeners to reach out to him. If our listeners could call Governor Kemp's office at 404-656-1776 and ask him to be looking into these abuse of power cases that include you, Shelby, and also the Hernandez family. Additionally, I would encourage our listeners to reach out to Senator Ossoff at 470-786-7800. That's 470-786-7800. Please, let's give these offices a call. I think the more people they hear from, the better. They've got to stop what's going on with these child abuse pediatricians. They're destroying families in their state. Everybody feels like it's not happening until it happens to them, but it's starting to happen so often. Everybody knows somebody this is happening to, and that's a crisis. Anaria needs to come home. These babies need to come home. Also, you could check out the Parents Behind the Pinwheels. You can visit our website, fosteringthefuturepodcast.org. I'm actually setting up a site today with some action items if you want to learn more about how you can help. I'll tell you, Shelby, we've been posting on TikTok about the Hernandez family. It's taking me, Christy, and Jen, like 80% of my day for the past couple of days has been responding to these comments. I'm like sitting at my son's baseball game, like trying to keep up with it. I can't tell you how many people are like, this happened to me when I was a kid. They thought my mom was abusing me. I had a bone disease. Have they looked into this? This happened to my cousin. This happened to my aunt. This happened to my nephew. Like, people everywhere have a story about this happening to someone that they cared about. And so if you're a listener and you know somebody this has happened to, or if this story has gotten your heart the way that it has mine, please do something about it. Don't just listen and move on to the next podcast. Let's start taking action, because, you know, you sit around thinking it's not happening to you. It could happen to you next. And also for our listeners, please share this episode and please join our TikTok and share the stories there. If our listeners go to fosteringthefuturepodcast.org, I'm going to put a button right on the front page and it's going to say Crisis in Georgia. Click that button. That will also link to all of the stories that we've talked about with the Hernandez family and with Shelby. And those pages have individual links on how to support those families.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you subscribe and follow us on social. We hope that you join us again next time and keep on fostering the future.